in the door.
Neighbor right now. And, you know, we have to just grab the country. That's right. You used to call him. If you were keys, it's just walking in the door. And
Christy, you ready? Welcome, everyone, to today's meeting of the House Revenue Committee, which is now in session. We have special guests today to impart information that I think that is going to impact what we do and how we look in this session and future sessions. Paul will introduce them, and we'll give them our attention.
Madam Chair, as we've discussed about one of the functions of the committee has been to overview the revenue forecast process. And the way that process has worked since 1980 is it's been produced out of the Office of Economic Analysis in the Department of Administrative Services. And so their staff is all here today with State Economist Tom Petowski and Deputy State Economist Dave Beck. We'll be talking about I've asked them more to talk about the structure of Oregon's economy and regional, sub-regional, and western regional issues. Talk a little bit about the process itself. They are preparing now for an update of the forecast that was used in the governor's recommended budget in December, and they will release to you February 25th. The March forecast, it will give you an update of the revenue situation and changes in the economy. So this is really some background information for you on the process and the structure of the overall economy, and then they'll have those updated numbers for you in about a month.
Okay. Gentlemen, please come forward, and I know you know to introduce yourselves, and thank you for coming.
Good morning, Vice Chair Berger, members of the House Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Tom Petowski, State Economist with the Office of Economic Analysis. And with me today is Deputy State Economist Dave Beck, also with the Office of Economic Analysis. As Paul mentioned to you, this is a little bit different than sort of the presentations you'll see from us when we deliver the quarterly forecast, which Paul mentioned will be February 25th. So this is more going to be somewhat of an overview, a little bit about our office, talking about the forecast process, and really looking at regional aspects, comparing us to some other western states, looking at the composition within the state, and sort of giving you a feel of the Oregon economy, and quite a bit on the demographics of what's going on also in the state, because that's also one of the functions of our office. So let me start off with talking a little bit about the history of our office. It was formed, as Paul mentioned, in 1980. We're in the Department of Administrative Services, and we generate a quarterly economic and revenue forecast. Now, we switch from a June forecast to a May 15th forecast every odd year, which is during legislative sessions. And that is to give you a little bit of extra time in terms of any changes you may do on your budgeting processes. The May forecast is the forecast that sets the boundaries, in essence, for the revenue ceiling that we believe is going to be coming in, the revenue amount that will be coming in over the budget period. Then you will have legislative changes that you do that may impact revenues that Paul's office will also investigate. And the combination of the May 15th forecast, legislative changes, then sets the close of session forecast. And that's the one that you have to meet in terms of your appropriations. We have a number of review committees that assist us in our forecast process. The Governor's Council of Economic Advisors that was formed in December of 1980, this is a dozen individuals, mostly from industry. We have a few academics on the committee. The Department of Administrative Services Advisory Committee are made up of generally state agencies that we get data from, that use our information, and they give us their feedback. And then most recently, we formed the Council of Revenue Forecast Advisors in May of 2003. This council is made up of tax preparers, advisors, CPAs, corporate tax experts. We also have members from the Department of Revenue, and also we have members from the Legislative Revenue Office.
Mr. Petowski, are you aware that the thing did not change, but you're talking about Okay, I'm thinking you're down on the next slide because you're talking about these things in the next slide, and I'm going,
wait a minute.
Okay.
You're reading ahead now.
I'm reading ahead, and I've just been castigated for it. I apologize. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, this has been a very helpful committee. These committees, by the way, the Governor's Council, we meet twice a quarter, and we meet each of the other committees once a quarter. So we're running about 16 meetings per year reviewing our forecast process. Down below here, 1991 to 1998, the office, besides the general fund revenue forecast and the economic forecast, added a number of functions. Population forecast that Kaneha Vaja is in the process of doing. Our population survey with the Oregon Progress Board, prison inmate forecast, lottery revenue forecast is now under our office, and we also manage the highway cost allocation study that sets the weight mile taxes and registration fees. And quite frankly, my best guess is during this period of time, the state economy was sort of doing some empire building during this period.
That's not true.
For those who don't know, he's referring to Mr. Warner.
Madam Chair, it was more drawing the short straw.
I understand.
And these were things that not anybody else wanted to do.
I think there's professional chiding going on.
There wasn't a lot of competition for these activities.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I would say the reason actually for these functions is because Paul had set up the office, and I'm carrying this forward, of really being a apolitical, unbiased. We give you the numbers as we see it, with no sugarcoating on it in of any form. And because of that sort of very standalone aspect of the office, Paul really did build up quite integrity for the office and credibility. And as a consequence, these functions, I think, came over to the office because of those reasons.
Notice he left out accuracy, Madam Chair.
Just as a point of curiosity, Paul, what years were you the state economist?
I was state economist from 1989 to 1999.
And came
and
to
I came here right at the start of the 99 session.
And you were the next state economist?
That's
ever?
Correct.
Okay.
Actually, at that time, it's just another personal reference. Tom was on the Council of Economic Advisors as chairman of the Portland State University Economics Department. So he had agreed to come over to be state economist at that point.
Thank you for the sidebar. I think it's
a bit. Hey, Madam Chair, I have a real question.
Yes, by all means.
If you're non-biased, could you expand just briefly on lottery revenue forecasts? And we've seen the line games, a lot of discussions. Or later in your presentation, you're going to talk about just what it is you do for lottery revenue forecasts? Or can you answer that now?
Vice Chair and Representative Boquist, I wasn't going to talk at all really today about lottery or the process of the forecast. I can just briefly tell you that we meet quarterly, once again, with lottery, generally about two meetings each quarter. We get, because we also need the data and so on from them in order to do our forecast. But our modeling and so on was all arranged inside our office. And lottery, in essence, accepts what forecast we come up with. So we're in the process with the line game situation of working with them. And we will be giving you a update of what our expectation is of that forecast in the March forecast, and then a further update, of course, in the all-important May forecast. And we're also working with LRO on that type of forecast.
The Legislative Revenue Office.
The Legislative Revenue Office.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, ma'am.
Mazin, we're working on.
Okay.
This gives a schematic of that whole process where we first start off and we meet with the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors in what we call our pre-meeting. And because national conditions really do push around what happens in the Oregon economy. You know, Intel, in essence, could care less how many chips they sell in Oregon. They really care about what happens internationally, nationally. So we review the information we get from a forecasting service called Global Insight, After that review, and we also discuss the latest employment numbers for the state, we then come with a preliminary forecast with an all-day meeting with the governor's conference again and then Department of Administrative Services Advisory Committee. They give us their suggestions, critiques. We take in those suggestions into account, and then we come up with a final economic forecast. What happens in the economy affects what happens to revenues. And so that result then flows into our revenue forecasting models, and we concentrate mainly on the personal income tax models and the corporate income tax models, because now you're already approaching 90% of all general fund revenues are made up by those two categories. We meet then with the Council of Revenue Forecast Advisors. We get a take on their view of what's happening to revenues. And then we also fold in any legislative and policy changes that may have occurred, and then that finally come up with our final revenue estimate. And that's what we deliver every quarter. Okay, with that, I want to briefly go into Oregon's economy. The economy is very diverse. If we take a line right through here, sort of the Cascade Mountains, it seems like a sort of a very logical demarcation, and the eastern counties are much more natural resource based, and then in the western counties a more mixture of manufacturing and natural resource base, with definitely the concentration in the Portland metro area of the high-tech manufacturing. This is real gross state product. Gross state product measures the output value of at the state level. You've probably heard of the gross domestic product at the national level. And this is the corollary to the state level. Sure. And what I want to just point out here is the changing nature over this 10-year period. Down here in electronic equipment, you can see a huge growth in output value over a 10-year period. Lumber and wood had a relative decline over the same period of time. And what has occurred, if we take a look at durable goods manufacturing, you can see that in 91 it constituted 11.8% of the activity in the state in terms of output value, and now it's well over a third of the activity. And what essentially happened in the process, the state wanted to move away from mostly a natural resource-based economy, and we were successful in attracting especially high-tech manufacturing. In the process, we actually, in essence, raised the base of manufacturing in the state and became proportionally a more manufacturing-based economy. Because lumber and wood products is part of manufacturing. We've added now another large factor to it, which is mostly the semiconductors. And when you're going through business cycles, the most volatile sector of your economy comes from durable goods manufacturing. So in the good times, it really is very, very good, and you do very, very well. But in the bad times, you tend to have a deeper recession than other states would have, not having this sort of proportionally heavy leaning towards the durable goods manufacturing. To give you some aspect about employment for industrial composition, we're very similar, really, to the U.S. in terms of what we have in services, what we have in manufacturing, but we're just proportionally more heavy in the manufacturing sector in terms of employment. And I just have two things to relate to here. The state of Washington North is only 9.6%. The U.S. average overall is 10.9%. May not seem like a big difference, but even though this is a little less than 2% above the U.S. average, it really puts us into about the top five states in the U.S. in terms of employment and manufacturing. And then you can see down below here, the computer electronics, we really disproportionately have a high percent of our employment in that area. And you can see just relative to Washington, which has less than 1%. And part of the story is, with this past recession we've gone through, this was really a manufacturing-led recession, and the states that had a heavy predominance in manufacturing felt this worse than most other states. And, of course, we felt it almost as worse as anyone did. Our exports, very important for the state. They've come back quite nicely. We've had a little bit of bump, a little slowdown when we had the SARS situation, and you got a mad cow here and there and some chicken flu, and so it sort of hurts those type of exports. But we've, I think, moved through those periods of time. And with the declining U.S. dollar, our exports are in a better position to compete overseas. And we've seen some very nice tick-ups in especially agricultural products, transportation equipment, a little bit of recent softness in computer and electronic products. But we expect that also to come back. Lots of numbers here. This just gives us our trade partners. You can see that there's some very, very strong growth in a year-to-date comparison of 2003 to 2004, with Canada, mainland China especially, Taiwan, and then some slowing down. We have a little drop from Japan and quite a drop from Korea, and a lot of that is related to those computer electronic products where we've had a little bit of a slowdown. And I'm going to relate that back to when we talk about Oregon itself, because that explains also just a slight sort of softening in our economy as we ended the second half of this last year. And it was related, in my mind, to an energy situation, which I'll mention, and also the computer component situation. Just to give you an idea of the main items that we export to these different countries. Transportation equipment is the main item we export to Canada. Machinery is next, computer electronic products. For Japan, it's agriculture and computer. And then everybody else, computer just really dominates, with agriculture a close second.
Yes. Excuse me. This is based on dollars, I presume, and transportation equipment, machinery, non-electoral, that's not self-evident to me what that is. Is that rail cars?
The transportation equipment, we're an odd state in terms of transportation equipment, for first. I mean, we make almost every transportation equipment you can think of. We make snowcats. We make railroad cars. We do airplanes around the Bend area now. We've got, of course, the trucks. We've got the RVs, the fifth wheelers. The only thing we don't seem to make are transportation cars. Passenger cars, I mean. But everything else.
School buses?
School buses, yes. Yes.
Okay,
all that is in transportation.
And so that's an amalgamation of all
right.
that.
Right. Your machinery part are all kinds of capital goods that help make things. This could be from stamping machines to stamp out metal, as an example. Anything that helps, like in the lumber and wood industry, machinery that helps cut down the lumber and wood would be in that category.
Okay, thank you.
Unemployment rates. Unfortunately, this is an older slide. We're updating to the December slide, but I didn't get it fast enough over to Paul's office. But the December numbers show us at a 6.8% and a rank of number 48. Now, it may not seem like much, but we had been either number 50 or number 49 for the past 3.5 years every month. And this is the first month that now we're number 3, in a sense, rather than the 1 and 2 spot of having the worst unemployment rates. Alaska and Michigan have higher unemployment rates for December. I've added a couple of other states that are close to us, and Arizona and Texas, because we, in terms of semiconductor sightings, that's usually where they put plants at these days, or here in Oregon. And then who has the lowest unemployment rates? North Dakota has come back as having the lowest unemployment rate again for December, which they had running for about 3.5 years.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Question.
Representative Bose.
Could you just divert just a small amount, because it always comes up? I mean, why are the Washington and Idaho economies slightly better than we are? Can you, from an economist's point of view, what's different that they have or they do, or how are they different from us?
Vice Chair, Representative Boquist, let's take Washington. Washington, very much almost like a mirror image of us, but not quite. What I mean by that is, you look at agriculture, some similarity there. You know, you got the Cascades that come right up, the same kind of structure of the economy on either side of the mountains. We have a high concentration in high tech. They have a high concentration in high tech, but ours is manufacturing high tech, Theirs is software. Transportation equipment. We also have a relatively good cluster these days in transportation equipment. But, of course, Washington's is the Boeing, a completely different look than what ours is. And so I think what we've found is with this recession, manufacturing-based, we have a higher manufacturing-based type economy compared to the state of Washington. And the software industry, although got hit very hard, and their dot-coms, especially more in Washington, their software industry, I don't think, suffered as much as sort of what we call the information system did down here. Definitely their high-tech did not hurt as much as ours did. And so you take a look at that manufacturing base and type of recession, that just hit us pretty hard. Now, also at the same time, both Washington and Oregon have had in-migration. And so I think even though this is 5.7, they're at 39 position, their rate probably would be lower, as ours would, if we didn't have a positive net in-migration to the state. With our ability not to create jobs during the recession and population growth still increasing, you get that unemployment rate really sticking up there.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Do you see a relationship between Oregon's minimum wage and the unemployment rate?
Vice Chair Representative Galizio, not really. I think when you go through recessions, then definitely a high minimum wage does impact a little bit more on your economy because costs are more important. Firms are trying to get by, and thus having a little bit higher, is a higher, relatively higher cost. It was definitely no problem through the 1990s at all for us. Washington has a relatively high minimum wage too, and they're not hurting as badly. I really think it's the underlying structure of the economy that's more responsible, and the population coming in. And I don't believe the population is coming in because we have a high minimum wage. There's other reasons why they're coming in, and we're getting that 25 to 35 age group. We're gaining that population, where some other states are actually losing that type of population. So I think it's the attraction of the livability here and our structure of our economy that's really more responsible.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please continue.
Here's some unemployment rates by region. These are not seasonally adjusted. This is quite an improvement for the Portland metro area. This had been, in 2002, this rate in the Portland metro area had been higher than any other region in the state. And we hadn't seen that for almost 20 years. And that's the relative aspect of the recession, hitting mostly manufacturing. The base is mostly up in this area, and that's the area that got hit most hardly by the recession. This gives a little bit of a history. We had sort of a double dip in job losses, and we believe that we're finally getting out of this recession and into recovery. It was deeper than the 91 recession, not as bad at all as the Hall of Fame recession back in 80-82. Interestingly enough, for your information, the drop in state tax revenues in the 80-82 period were larger proportionally than they were in the 80-82 period. In fact, the last time we had a larger proportional drop than in the 2001-03 biennium was the 1933-35 biennium. So we had quite, and no two recessions are alike, and I kind of characterize this recession as a dual recession. Not only did we have job losses, but we also have wealth losses. And the combination of the two really hit our tax revenues. Plus, we are the state that depends more on an income tax than any other state.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I don't want to take anything away from the Hall of Famers in 82, but I would like to nominate 2002 just because it was, in terms of actual dollars, wasn't it even proportionately larger than 82?
In terms of tax dollars?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Employment, it's not.
Yeah.
But in terms of tax dollars, yes, yeah. Very much worse. This is your 100-year flood aspect in the 2001-03 period.
Further questions? So let's proceed.
We've just developed in the summer 2003 a Oregon Index Leading Economic Indicators, just like leading economic indicators for the U.S. And we did this because we're having some trouble defining when turning points were happening in the economy. And we wanted some other piece of information that might assist us in that. As an example, in 2001, when we were forming the May forecast at that period of time, employment statistics were still showing positive job growth for the first quarter of 2001. Then when the numbers were revised in February of the next year, we found out that that period that we were looking at were actually job losses. So we wanted some other piece of information because data does get revised, and we need a good signal in, you know, reading the tea leaves as to what's going on. So we formulated this index to assist us. And these are some of the components that go into that index.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Booker.
I'm assuming, because the number one item on that list there is semiconductor billings, that, you know, not just your verbal statement that, you know, we are tied to the high-tech semiconductor production. If it's one of your components, I mean, that's a fairly serious indicator, especially given the fact that, you know, it could be a transitory manufacturing operation. And what we're seeing is, you know, just like we saw with other products, where China, Korea, and soon India, Pakistan will start producing the same type of facilities with lower labor rates. They're not beating up the labor rates, but see that portion of the economy migrate. Have you noticed any trends? I mean, we start to see semiconductor plants empty around the state right now. Is there a decrease in manufacturing capacity happening?
Vice Chair, Representative Boquist, a couple things going on in the high-tech semiconductor area. Definitely they had a very rough time through the recession. And when you have that, you have excess capacity, and the way dynamic economies should work is you should get rid of some of this overcapacity. It's resources being tied up that's not being used, and they need to be spread out to other parts where they can be used. So we do have some we had a lot of, especially the Japanese manufacturers that were in out in Washington County area, has left the state. So there had been some pullback in that capacity. At the same time, Intel doesn't seem to be very a footloose industry, and has expanded their fab plants, have refurbished older fab plants, and so they really are, I think, a real good mainstay that are here. I'll have some risks I'll talk about later in terms of possible, just as you mentioned, research facilities, which is our niche in the semiconductor industry here in Oregon, that research capability could be moving overseas. But they have been coming back. Employment has been increasing in that sector. But our forecast, which goes out to 2011, we do not have employment in that sector returning to its pre-recession levels. We think that there's definitely been some structural change. Some jobs have been lost for good. This is the index. The darker line is the index. And what we want to see it do is we want it to lead what's happening to the employment. And we first, of course, formulated this towards the end of 2003. I think our December forecast was the first one we had the index available. And, of course, with hindsight, if we would have had the index earlier, it might have helped us signal the drop that was going to occur in employment here. It correctly went up. Employment went up. As it came down, we had that second drop in the employment, the sort of stalling out. And, of course, now we're wondering how well this index actually does work, because now it's come back down again. But it's not to a point where it's very, very low like it was in this area here or in here. And we think this is just an indication of the energy situation that was occurring as we were in the second half of 2004, very, very high, rapid rise of energy prices, sort of unknowns. I sort of characterize that businesses hate unknowns more than maybe a direction that the economy is going in that they don't care for. At least they know what's going on. And I really think the closeness of the presidential election had some marginal impacts of businesses sitting on the sides waiting to see what happens. It wasn't that they were that overly concerned about the actual outcome, I don't believe. But once knowing what the outcome is, they can plan better for the future. And then we had a buildup of inventories in the semiconductor industry. And a forecast of sales were also lowered. And this buildup of inventory, I think, slowed that sector down temporarily. We're seeing slightly better sales forecasts now. So we expect this to come back, and we're also getting some better reports that the inventories are starting to be pared down. So with that view, then you take a look at this chart, which measures the number of job gains since supposedly the end of what we'll call the job recession. Not the recession as measured by other means, which supposedly ended in 2001. But for us, it really started. The jobs really started to fall about November of 2000 on a monthly basis, and ended in June of 2003. And then so we had this building up nicely, and then here is sort of our soft patch, and all of a sudden just sort of flattening out, and we're still 17,200 jobs short of getting back to our pre-recession level of jobs, because we lost 65,400 jobs in that almost three-year period of time. But December's numbers were up fairly nicely. And with those other reports, and even though I hate the energy situation, it seems like I don't even open the newspaper because it's either going to be bad news or good news, but it's hard to get a direction as to where it's going to end up at. I thought things were much, much better 2 weeks ago. And now we're seeing the price of oil bouncing back up towards the $50 level on a per barrel basis.
I sometimes hate opening the newspaper, too. Rather, what is pine tar?
Oh, well, the soft patch was the phrase used to describe there was a softening in job growth in the economy for the national economy, and I started to say, well, what could we call it for Oregon?
Pine tar.
Fur tar, we're in West Point.
Okay.
Fur tar.
Okay, whatever.
Depends on which side.
Okay, I just need something. Thank you.
This shows you that most industries have increased employment across almost all sectors of the economy. In the manufacturing sector would include your semiconductors, includes lumber and wood products, includes food processors. The only area that's been very short in any sort of, well, actually it's very, very minimal loss, has been the natural resource and mining sector. So with that in mind, that's sort of where we stand right now. And we think the recovery is in place. Almost all sectors are seeming to benefit from it. But it's going to be a very mild recovery, period. Compared to some in other Western states, this is called employment volatility. And what it's doing is comparing from 1994 to 2003, what's been the variability in employment in each of these states relative to the variability of the U.S. overall? And so the U.S. is set at 100 here, and you can see that Oregon is about 145. So we have a relatively more volatility involved in our employment as it moves about. You can see Nevada is quite high, and theirs has mostly been on the upside rather than the downside. They've had almost 4% type employment growth during this period of time, and even in the low 3%, high 2%, even through the recession, which is completely different than the U.S. average. Now, that might say, now this is not to advocate that we want a Nevada economy, necessarily. This is a cost of doing business. And interestingly enough, Oregon has the lowest measure here of any of these Western states. But we should explain a little bit what this means. This cost of doing business is made up of three categories: labor costs, energy costs, and what's called tax burdens. The labor cost is what's called the per unit labor cost. And what they do is they say, okay, what's been the earnings by labor per dollar of output? Or what you might say is that Oregon, being a relatively more manufacturing-based economy, we produce things of very high output value per worker. And so if you take that as the measure, the dollar amount that you pay out per workers per the dollar that you get for your output, it tends to be a relatively low measure. So you want to keep in mind that that's how that is measured, because there's other comments like with minimum wage laws and so on that people might have a different view of what labor costs would be. Energy costs are average cents per kilowatt hour, and then tax burdens includes your total taxes and fees as percent of personal income. But it also includes business contributions to unemployment and workman compensation programs. Now, Oregon, once again, relatively low on that measure. And so that also helps to bring this measure down. It's the average of these three things, but labor constitutes 75% of making up this measure. And I really believe the reason why we are so low is that high output value of what we produce relative to the workers we have. Yes?
Just to pursue this just a second for us non-economists. Can you give us an example of the opposite of what you're talking about, an industry or a model that is a low output value per worker in a state that depended on it?
Yes, Vice Chair. You want to think about, in manufacturing, you have a lot of machinery and that kind of stuff, a lot of capital items relative to the amount of labor you have. In a place like retail, you tend to have a lot more labor relative to the capital and the building and that stuff. And places that tend to be a little bit higher in the labor area, the total cost of whatever you're doing tends to be mostly your labor bill. Whereas in manufacturing, it's your interest charge, because maybe you bought the machinery and you've got outstanding debt, and so that's part of your cost of doing business. And the labor cost part tends to be a smaller percent of your overall cost. Even though people in manufacturing could get higher wages than, say, in retail or in the food industry, restaurant industry.
And so what this graph is, I'm sorry, what this graph is basically saying is that our manufacturing base has this lower labor cost ratio, if you will, and it's weighted 75% in this, and so combined, that makes us very low.
I think that's a fair representation, yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm at the 90% mark here. The other component that Representative Berger didn't say is that lower labor is producing a high-value product, right?
That's correct.
Which is where we're getting the correlation.
Between them.
Right.
Yes, Madam Chair. When you look at that chart, though, to take Vice Chair Berger's example and take it a little farther, California is way up here. Washington's much higher than us. Could you take either state and project why theirs possibly is twice as to three times higher than ours?
Vice Chair, Representative Kahn. Washington, you think about Microsoft and who are they paying? I mean, they have all these software engineers, programmers. Their only capital equipment tends to be their buildings. And if you think about the costs now of PCs and things like that, those are not relatively that expensive. So as opposed to a semiconductor fab facility where it's billions of dollars what those things cost. Okay. So that's part of Washington's situation.
Yeah.
Even though, notice, Boeing would be just kind of the opposite, though. It would be somewhat similar to us in that respect, okay, with very high output value per worker. California is interesting. I'm trying to characterize that.
I was at a loss also.
Now, once again, the labor cost is the highest component. My guess is California probably doesn't do all that well, possibly, on the energy cost area, especially. And that's 15% of the cost of doing business. So I'm sure it gets hurt there. Tax burden, I think it has, even if you don't include the contribution for business, if you do include that, they are much higher than we are for the compensation to unemployment and workman's comp areas. And then their overall taxes. I think Oregon still ranks as a lower burden, even on that score, than what California does.
Thank you.
Industrial diversity. This is an employment comparison to the U.S. based on what kind of business industry structure the U.S. has and the employment in those industries relative to each of these states. And you can see that Nevada, that's done very well on the employment growth, has probably an undue concentration in one entertainment-type industry. And it can live and die by that industry. So we tend to be a little bit closer. If you're at one, you're exactly the same diversity as the U.S. is on average. If you were at zero, you are a complete opposite end. And we compare, Utah is a little bit stronger than we are, Arizona is, but relative western states, except for Nevada, are sort of in the same ballpark. Population change. The western states are all above the U.S. average. The western states are still a magnet, especially for net in-migration. But notice Oregon relatively lower compared to the western states. And I think a lot of this is a consequence of the Asian financial crisis that hit us also towards the end of the 1990s. And then, of course, the recession that was more deeply felt here than the other states. But still, even though we were probably hurt more than almost any other state, we still had higher growth than the U.S. average. Labor force participation rates, we're very close to the U.S. average among the western states. And the same for the female labor force participation. And both of these have been growing over time. Median household income. We're better than Arizona and Idaho, but quite a ways from Washington and California. And we are just below the U.S. average. And we've been below the U.S. average, I believe, since about 1979. Per capita income, also we're below the U.S. average. But you can see about the same states line up in the same way. The poverty rate, this is from the census numbers, we're at 11.3%. Generally, these poverty rates have come down since 1990. We saw a small rise in 2001-2002 related to the recession situation. But although the rate has come down through the 1990s, the number of people in under poverty have stayed about the same since the beginning of the 1990s. So even though we had that great economic growth through those 90s, we really didn't change the number of people in poverty. And part of the reason is that we had, of course, very strong population growth during that period, a lot of net in-migration. And this is true across all the states that had this kind of situation, that just keeps those poverty numbers up. It's not that, I don't want you to get the impression that only people that are unemployed that don't have any money move into the state, but the regular mix of people that do move in, you have people that are unemployed that do have that situation. And then when you do hit a situation like a recession, you have a larger percentage. You have a larger number of people then become unemployed, even though the percentage has come down. Poverty rate for children, same story. It also has come down over time. And we've actually had some decrease in the poverty rate for children. Housing affordability. Owner costs as a percent of household income. And this is for if this is an older. Is this the older one? Okay. Essentially, what it's saying is that of those that I think you have to help me out here, Tamara. What's this one?
You'll have to come in and speak to the microphone, I'm sorry, and introduce yourself, too.
Sorry.
That's fine. You'll have to introduce yourself first.
For the record, my name is Kanaya Baide, with the Office of Economic Analysis. The new updated chart will show, essentially, this also shows the same story. This is the percentage of households who spend more than 30% of their income on housing. That's how we usually measure housing affordability. If they spend more than 30% of the income on housing, that's not affordable for them.
Okay.
I think it's interesting to note, with very fast-growing places like Nevada, that affordability, even there, which you would think in the past had been very cheap, has shot up very quickly.
Excuse me, but this is 2000 data, and doesn't reflect changes as a result of what we've been through in the last 5 years.
That's correct. This is from 2000 census data.
Okay. This was still a relatively good year.
Okay. Madam Chair. Yes, Representative Riley.
So if I'm reading this right, what this chart on the left says is of those people who own their houses, the average across the state is that they pay 25.4% of their income for that house?
The current chart will show, similar to this, about 24 to 25% of the households spend more than 30% of their income on housing.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is education attainment percentage with a bachelor's degree or higher, and this is, of course, the year 2000 again, those 25 years and older. We're just slightly above the U.S. average. And I think it's true, most of this has come about because of net in-migration, people with college degrees.
And again, this is 2000 data.
This is 2000 data. And that's the most recent that we have available.
I understand,
This is an interesting viewpoint here. Although rather we were concentrating on the western states, we've got all 50 states here. And what this chart shows is the blue line, and on the left scale, is a measure of the per capita income for each of these states. And then the right scale, and the red line, is the percent of college graduates in each state. And I think it shows quite clearly that the states with the higher per capita income tend to have populations with more college graduates. Very quickly, this is... we don't have an opportunity to often talk about agriculture and the farm area, but just an aspect of farming in Oregon. We're definitely a state that is made up of small farms relative to our neighbors and the U.S. average, especially. In fact, the whole West is mostly a small farm area. When we look at family or individually owned farms, once again, Oregon is quite high relative to the other states. For 2002. Average farm size, fairly small in terms of acres. We're pretty close to our other neighbors. When you have some very wide open spaces and you get rangeland, that tends to be much higher in terms of average size. And then in terms of the average value of agricultural products sold per farm, this is actually, we do quite a bit of value from agriculture. Given our large number of small farms on a per farm basis, that puts us down at this level. Now, that's just some aspects of how we compare to some of the Western states. And with our regional comparisons within the state, this is our 10-year decennial population growth for the different counties. And you can see that, and not surprisingly, where most of the growth has been. The sort of middle and somewhat lower Willamette Valley, Multnomah County, if it had space, it probably would be one of the ones growing as fast as these other counties. Then we have, of course, the Deschutes area, especially centered around Bend, has been extremely fast growth. And then we have some growth in especially the Jackson and the Medford area.
I guess I'm kind of surprised about Morrow and Mal here.
It doesn't take many to do that.
What's their stimulus? Yeah, what's stimulating?
Vice Chair, the Morrow probably is because of the prison siding.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
And Mal here.
And Mal here?
I mean the Mal here.
Mal here is the prison. That's
yes.
Okay. And Morrow?
Small base, small growth, translates into a higher percentage.
Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, Morrow had a couple of projects in the 90s that really increased their size. They had a warehouse facility there, a distribution center, and then they also had some food processing facilities there. And I think one of those was shut down recently.
You're speaking of the Simplot potatoes?
The Simplot. That's correct, Vice Chair. Yes. And most of it is centered around the Boardman area. They redid their port facilities. They've been pretty active in trying to do economic development there.
Okay. Thanks.
Percent of elderly population by county. The Portland metro area, these counties in here, Washington, Yamhill, Clackamas, what's happened here is that we're getting a slightly higher percentage of younger people making up the population, and that keeps the percent then of the elderly population down for those areas. Some of these counties in here in the eastern area, they're have a high percentage possibly because either the young population isn't growing or they've left the area, and that's what's caused that aspect to occur.
Madam Chair.
Yes, President.
I noted way back when in your slide presentation, unemployment obviously was astronomical way out on the eastern side, but almost those same identical red counties on the coastal areas had high unemployment numbers that weren't seasonally adjusted. And is that a combination of, you know, older population and tourism related? That we're, you know, here we are because we're not seasonally adjusted. We're in December and tourism is big in December, and so we're seeing higher unemployment numbers. Why are the two coastal regions? Why is there a correlation between high unemployment in those specifically in December and the age?
Vice Chair Representative Boquist, that's exactly right. Those numbers, when they put them down at the county levels, they don't seasonally adjust them. And yes, you're getting into the area where the tourism, this is the year 2000, but it would be any really December, the tourism dries up. And so you get more unemployment there. You also have Douglas County, a lot of lumber and wood. And in 2000, it wasn't necessarily the this is elderly population. So I think it's still, that might be the situation too about the young not really growing that fast in Douglas.
Okay, thank you.
Median household income, once again, right up here has the highest income levels. Deschutes has joined the group. A lot of it is from in-migration. Of people with higher incomes. And then the eastern counties tend to have especially in these areas, have the lower median incomes. And it's been this way for a long, long time.
Madam Chair.
Yes, President.
Deschutes County, you said in-migration of higher income individuals. Is that, are we talking about people who migrated in because they like the lifestyle there and brought their businesses with them, like home-based businesses or whatever, and transferred those businesses into Deschutes County? Or are we talking about an economic engine in Deschutes County that generated the jobs and then drew them in?
Vice Chair Representative Boquist, anecdotally, I usually get over to Ben maybe 3-4 times a year for talks. The story that they tell me there is because of the natural beauty, the attraction, the skiing, all this outdoor stuff, it attracts people in that that have been in sort of their late 40s, early 50s, that decide to sell their business and said, no, this is where I want to go and I want to relax and retire. So they did bring money with them. And then at the same time, I think they can't help themselves. The reason they were very successful in business, they want to do it again. And so they start new businesses in the area. So, and that's been kind of a real engine, I think, of growth for them.
Right, so what you're really saying is development despite ourselves.
Yes.
They're bringing the jobs with them. Good, maybe we can export them to Deschutes County.
We could export the weather and the mountains and the golf courses. Okay, let's go on.
Poverty rates, yeah, just a mirror image of some of these other slides that we saw. Average wage per job, the Oregon overall average is 34,000. Once again, the concentration is here. We want to keep in mind, too, that this is also the highest cost of living area, is in the Portland metro, too. But there are some wide differences, as you can see. Population with a bachelor's degree are also in those counties. This is almost a microcosm of that 50-state one I showed you with personal per capita income and education level attainment. Same tends to be true for the counties. And then some projection by age. Kinea works very closely with the Department of Education, as an example, because they need to have some aspect of how many enrollments are expected over the next couple of years into our K through 12 education system. So his projections are very important along those lines. And you can see that coming here, the 0 to 4 gradually rising, and the 5 to 17 is starting to flatten out. And this next slide shows the growth rates of those, and you can see that this is just about zero as we move into, we'll be moving into just a little bit up as we go into the 2005-2006 period of time. But definitely down from the stronger growth we saw at the beginning of the 1990s. Uh, 45 to 64 year olds, as you can see, let's see, as Kinea tells me, baby boomers were born, supposedly the years that they use are 1946 through 1964. So in 2005, they are now spanning the age group of 41 years old to 59 years old. And you can see that this age group, the 45 to 64, has really started to take off. Likewise, the 25 to 44-year age group, the baby boomers are moving out of that age group, and that's starting to flatten down. And here's these growth rates. Elderly population, the 85 and plus group has been growing. You can see that we're coming into a period of time with the 65 to 74 year olds are really increasing. And this age group tends to depend more on public services, especially medical services. And this shows those growth rates. You can see that this group here, as they were ending out in this year, this was the Depression era. We didn't have very many births there. So as they started to reach this age group, it was actually falling. But we're going to be picking that back up quite dramatically.
If you could speak, this is Oregon statistics. How does Oregon, in this mix, are we like other Western states, or do you, you know, and I just want a big picture, or other Eastern states, or how do we compare in these sort of demographic trends?
We track very closely with Washington. California is a little bit different, but in general, it's the same story. The baby boomers aging into 45 to 64 age group are translating into very fast growth rate of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Could you go back one step, one slide up? This elderly population is very interesting, elderly population growth. We see 65 to 74, the youngest elderly we call, that has actually declined because they were born during depression period, small group of people coming into that age group. And another part of the story is we always tell people that Oregon is a magnet for elderly migration. But the census 2000 doesn't show that.
Hmm.
We compare census 2000 with census 1990 census. What we ask in census is where you lived 5 years ago. That will give us the recent migration in 5 years period. Between 1985 and 1990, 5 year period, we had 15,115 net in migration of elderly, about 15,000. Between 1995 and 2000, same 5 year period, we had 1,340. So it has this has changed a lot by thousands, by 11 folds.
Hmm. Thank you.
Sure. Yes.
Well.
That's a pretty bleak picture.
What Paul may do is I have updated this chart too to include. I did all those ages and I did a stack diagram of those. Actually, Kinea did the stack diagram of those. And we also then had a diagram after that that showed the income from all sources for these same age groups. And what you can see is that as you get to the very elderly, the 85 plus, even the 65 plus area, you start to get the supplemental Social Security assistance and so on make up a higher percentage of their overall sources of income. And it's just that aspect. If you've got that population is starting to grow, there's some expectation that there'll be more demands in those areas. So finish up with our general sort of forecast now for the Oregon economy. What I want to point out with this graph, this is overall employment, is that we have a relatively mild recovery is our outlook relative to a type of recovery we saw out of 1991 where we had employment above 4% for 3 years running. So our expectation is that this year, once all the revised data finally comes in for 2004, we'll see about a 1.8% rise in employment. That's the first rise in jobs since 2000. We lost jobs for three consecutive years on average. But then we're looking at just a very about 2.1% in 2005, continuation of the recovery, and then sort of softening off to more long-run average aspect. You know, you take a look. Did the consumers hold back during the recession? No. Housing market going to bounce back? If anything, it's going to soften. it went very nicely through the recession, given 45-year low mortgage rates.
Representative Riley, you have a question.
Yeah. On this chart, this is showing the change in employment. Is this relative to the change in the population, or is this relative to previous employment?
Vice Chair, Representative Riley, this is in relation to previous employment.
So this doesn't... I'm sorry, follow up, please. So this doesn't show the jobless rate, because that would include increase in population. Is that right?
Vice Chair, Representative Riley, that's right. I mean, if you think about the labor force growth and the people that could be employed, yes, we've got a long ways to go to assimilate all those people in. We don't expect to get back to, for example, the pre-recession level of employment alone until mid this year. But if you take into account, as you're mentioning, the population increase, the labor force increase also, it's going to take a while yet before we get to the same sort of percent of labor force to employment that we saw in 2000, as would need to happen to have jobs go up even further.
One more, please.
Yes.
So this is, you know, we see these, I've seen this chart before because I was in a different committee and got this, and it implies, the chart implies an increase in, or actually implies a decrease in joblessness, but it's not really the case. Where are we in that chart? Where would the numbers be on that chart? Are we gaining jobs faster than we're gaining workforce, or not?
Vice Chair, Representative Riley, we've had job growth on a quarterly basis. I mean, we're on average in 2004, we're looking at 1.8%. Population growth, we believe at the time, has been about 1.1% in that year. So we are doing a little bit better than the population growth.
Thank you.
Representative Volkos, you have?
Yes, Madam Chair. 2 years of economics, I still don't understand it. What follow-up to what Representative Riley is saying, what we're saying here on the chart is that we're going to see roughly, if you forecast out to 2012 there, if you're talking about a 1%, between a 1% and a 2% gain per year, is that roughly what we're saying?
Vice Chair,
versus the old days where we were getting some places 4% a gain a year?
That is correct.
So our rate of growth is going to be very optimistically mild or whatever, but it's only going to be around 1%.
I believe so, yes. 1.5 maybe,
okay.
Throughout those period of time.
Right,
Representative Eskridge.
I think there deserves to be a clarification, because this particular chart goes back in the 90s when we were in our heyday period.
Right.
It'd be interesting to see what it was prior to, say, 1960 to 1990, to see how close our growth is in conjunction with those of the previous 30 years. Because we're not going to probably ever attain a 1990 to 2000 again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Vice Chair, Representative Esquivel. We look at, you know, for a very long run average, we hit somewhere, you know, depending on the period of time you want to take, 2%, maybe about 1.8, somewhere around there for that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Pretty close to what it, follow up. No?
Yeah.
Pretty close to what it is and what your projection is.
That's correct.
I just asked Paul if this was in his book of his bestseller.
Mm-hmm. it isn't our bestseller, but we do have. You know, the other time where we did see some real strong growth, and it was kind of masked by inflation, but in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Remember, that was very strong in migration into Oregon during that period, and we did, other than the 75 recession, we did have pretty strong employment growth then. But the 1.8, if we go back 50s and 60s, is probably pretty close.
Okay. Thank you.
Personal income projections. You can see how far, and you still have some wage increases that do occur, even in recessions, so you have a little bit, on average, some growth. We expect that has definitely picked up in 2004, but we don't expect great pickups any further along those lines. And I think Representative Esquivel's statements about the 90s being rather unique are true here, too. And then you can see the population growth has definitely come down, but our expectation will still be stronger than the U.S. average going out. And at least the most recent numbers we're seeing attest to that. Our forecast outlook is it's mild. We think it's in place. We hope it doesn't get knocked off. But so far, with the energy situation, the U.S. economy has moved through that seemingly okay. So we expect that the Oregon economy will also be moving along okay. But once again, a relatively mild type growth is our forecast. Now, there's risks to this sort of baseline average forecast. And there's positive risks, we're under-forecasting, or there's negative risks, we've over-forecasted. Some of the items I'm just listing here as positive aspects. I think improved outlook for energy prices, I'm still hopeful for that. It seems that the natural gas situation is not quite as dire as first believed, even though when you open up your heating bill, it's not a very pleasant sight, but it's looking more like that is something we can get through this winter and things will improve after that. So we're more hopeful that rather than just say, oh, heck, 3 months ago, that the energy situation is looking marginally better than it did before. And that actually could mean our forecast is a little too weak compared to what it might be. Negatives. Geopolitical is a risk any state faces. But as we come through here, once again on the energy side, we've got a real problem brewing with our snowpack and our hydroelectric power capabilities. And if the economy tries to chug along and we don't have enough hydroelectric generation, almost all our new electric generation is by natural gas powered turbines, and natural gas prices are at almost an all-time high at the moment. So that can translate into higher electricity prices. And things like everyone that uses electricity means higher costs in doing their business and, of course, in lighting your homes and so on. But we, so far, given the strength we've seen, even with the dangers we saw in 2004 with the energy area, we still managed to make ourselves through. And I think that, like I said, there's going to have to be a stronger negative aspect than what we're looking at right now. And that's, of course, a risk. The energy situation changes very dramatically on us, and then all bets would be off. But given the present situation, I think things are still strong enough that we'll continue on to recovery. Just a quick summary. We lost jobs third consecutive year in a row in 2003. We think the job gains are finally here. We know that it's definitely positive for 2004, even if they make some revisions. It's got to be positive. And we expect it to be about 1.8%, and these are the other percentages for 2005 and 1.8 in 2004. Manufacturing will be not that strong on average. Just as one of the things I mentioned to you, our high-tech employment growth does not reach its previous recession peak, even if it goes out to 2011 in the forecast. Non-manufacturing will do relatively better, so that the average will come out to where it does. And then personal income growth will be definitely lower than what we saw in the 1990s. I put this up. This is our website, and we've got a ton of information for you on our website. We have our full forecast that's available. We have data numbers. We have links to other websites that have economic data. Kinea has this population forecast there. We have a prison forecast available for you to look at. A ton of information if you're interested. It's a real data fest.
Hey, Madam Chair, is this the cliff the economists jump off here on this picture?
Representing Goldquist, you know, I have always suspected since I was here last session that when these economists would come in and show us, as you just pointed out, these odd herking and jerking numbers that cause us all to go, that they like that because because these are really interesting lines instead of these things that we find desirable. So not to, you know, but I think that they go, oh, something interesting happened, and we have to work on it. But that's just a little piece.
Well, Madam Chair, the good news is they're done 15 minutes earlier here.
They're very good.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I think that's outlined by the fact you never saw an average.
No, well,
line.
But just our children aren't average, nor are we. Further substantive questions or comments?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a simple question. Because people come in our office and say, you hear them, if only you would reduce the capital gains tax, if only you would, you know, lower the minimum wage, if only you would increase spending on higher education, if only you would market Oregon better, do this, do that, you know, industrial-ready land. To the extent you could capture this empirically, what would you see as actions that could be taken by people here, this body, that would facilitate economic growth in Oregon? If you could rank. I told you it's simple, very simple. Surely this is.
Yes. No. These are the questions of the day. Yeah. Vice Chair Representative Galizio. You know, everyone has a prescription as to what's going to help, and these prescriptions, in my mind, all you have to do is to see, well, which of these prescriptions would personally help you? And that seems to be the one that they will promote at the time. Interesting enough, with the capital gains tax, they fell by so far, it was almost a mute question, whether we would have a tax on them or not, given that we weren't bringing hardly anything in at all, given the collapse of the market. But you want to look at things like, you know, well, if I take a look at the 1990s, a lot of the same tax structure and everything was in place then. And we were among the top five growing states in the U.S. Through that decade. It didn't seem to hurt us then. That doesn't mean prospectively it could hurt us in the future. What we find in terms, I think, in economic development, tax breaks and tax credits to lure companies here tend to be the icing on the cake, not the cake. The cake is a educated labor force, is low labor costs, relatively lower labor costs, a good transportation system to markets. That's more the cake. And what might be the deciding factor between two or three competing locations could then be the tax breaks. But you're not going to make those first two or three cutoffs until you have the cake in place. And that's kind of a generality, you know, kind of statement. Really, too, as the country's progressed, you know, we've talked about outsourcing, and I've likened now the argument on outsourcing as an argument against unfair trade. You know, when a chip manufacturer from maybe Japan or sort of Korea would dump chips in the U.S. under the cost of producing them, we would yell foul, unfair trade, hit them with quotas, hit them with tariffs, you know, and that's how, you know, we need to protect our own industries. Well, I almost think with outsourcing, we're sort of yelling foul, unfair trade to China, India by telling them, you know, you're producing engineers, you're producing accountants, you're producing medical people, you're producing all these white-collar service people through your higher education system at a lower cost than we are. You know, we don't support our higher education system. You shouldn't support yours. It's unfair trade. So I really think if we're going to stay on our niche in the world, which is innovation, once something becomes a commodity, it seeks lowest cost. And that's been a story that's unfolded years and years in the U.S. Only before it was things like the component parts of items were made overseas, and those things weren't made here, they were outsourced. Now its services are being outsourced because the technology is able to do it today. And unless, I think in my mind, one of the key pins is higher ed, and if we can keep on that innovation edge, and be on top of that, then we will be the ones that will invent the new technology. And that's generally where the manufacturing starts, is going to be here, when you have a high-value, proprietary, knowledge-type-based goods and services.
Representative Esquivel, you had a question.
Well, actually, it's not a question, but it's to dovetail a little bit what he's saying about economic development. There's many, many factors with economic development. The thing that I found the most being involved in it in Southern Oregon is that your biggest factor in economic development is not the company that comes in from the outside. It's the retention and expansion of your small businesses within your community. Now, if you look at Jackson County, I believe in the last economic downtrend, we were probably maybe the best economy in the state of Oregon, or must have been number two, at least. Why? Diversification of our economy, and two, retention and expansion of the existing businesses that we had. We also did some e-commerce zones and overlays, which helped substantially. Pulled in six businesses the first week we did the e-commerce overlay, which I guess there's, what, two or three in the whole state, something like that?
That's right.
Very few. But innovative type things, but more importantly, when we just landed down there called Amy's Kitchen, I believe it was called. And the three first questions was asked, how intelligent is your workforce and how educated is it? Mm-hmm. What's your comp rate and what's your power rate? Three big factors. But the small business is the key of retention and expansion to work within your community and your economic structure itself.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Bocas, do you have a question?
Just a question. If you just 60 seconds or less save the world, like Representative Galizio said here, but forget about everybody else outside of the state of Oregon. Can you focus your comments back down? Because you said, well, people coming into the state. And I'm right in the same boat here with other representatives, is that what are we doing in Oregon to build business in Oregon? I could care less about somebody coming into the state.
Vice Chair, Representative Boquist, I would point you to the website for the Oregon Business Plan. I really think they've taken that to heart and are very serious about trying to maintain and grow your businesses that are here now rather than have them move someplace else.
And
So I would just mention that I think it is being looked at, and it's they're seriously pursuing that. And realize that, it's kind of like your chances of landing a big firm in a place may not be the best use of your resources.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you, and thank you to these folks who are incredibly knowledgeable and spend a lot of time looking at what we do and how it interrelates with the rest of the world and the rest of the country. A former chair of this committee, what was his comment about driving the car? These folks are trying to help us drive a car by looking in the rearview mirror of what has happened in the economy behind us. And they can't predict the future any better than the rest of us. And we're all kind of about it's a wonderful way of looking at this, and kind of framed it for me, and I would frame it the same way for you. We can see what happened a lot better than what we can see what's going to happen, and particularly in a world that, as we've all seen, the whole world impacts us. So with that, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
And do we have anything else?
No, Madam Chair, we have a series of bills for public hearing, possible work session tomorrow. So House Bill 2030, 2031, and 2032, those all have to do with Treasury management issues and cash management issues. So we'll have the Treasury here to talk with you tomorrow.
Okay. That being said, we will adjourn this.